Module 2, Adjustment and Love. Many people need to relearn how to love in order to love more maturely. Your capacity to love others is based on your capacity to love yourself, as I explore in the Power of Caring series. Learning to love yourself is not selfish and conceited. In fact, it is the most mentally healthy thing you can do. There are a number of specific steps that you can take to increase your self-love and connection with your true self. Over the past 35 years, I have asked thousands of people to do this exercise in the adjustment seminars, and it normally proves a very difficult assignment for most people to do. A typical separated person says, "I thought I knew what love was, but I guess I don't." In fact, many people feel inadequate about their definition of love. Love is like a diamond, and you can view it from many different directions, and there is no right or wrong way of defining it. There is only the way you feel about love. In our society, many people have stereotyped love to be something you do for somebody or for somebody. Very few people realize that love is something that should be centered within you. And the basis of loving others is to have love for yourself. To begin this section, let me present a somewhat cynical definition upon which many relationships are based. Love is the warm feeling that you get towards somebody who meets your neurotic needs. This is a definition of neediness rather than love. What we lack in ourselves, we hope to find in the other person. In other words, many of us are half people trying to love someone in order to become whole. My experience working with people has given me the following idea about loving, coming from a whole person who is mature in their life. Perhaps you've heard the expression warm and fuzzy with a fish hook in them. A warm fuzzy is a nice gesture that you give someone, such as saying, "I love you." Unfortunately, many of us are still struggling to fulfill ourselves. So if a life is empty, then when a person says, "I love you," it probably means, "Please, please, love me." The other person finds the warm fuzzy statement attractive, so swallows it and is hooked. Saying, "I love you," from an empty heart of emotional connection tends to be manipulative, while love from a heart of connections and embracing who we are as unique individuals allows others to be themselves and to be free to share in our lives. A common problem in society is that falling in love is the most acceptable reason for entering a committed relationship. However, falling in love may have to do more with the fulfilling loneliness than the warmth towards another person. Falling in love to overcome loneliness is not actually love. It is rather a feeling of warmth which comes from breaking down the barriers that have kept us from being intimate with other people. Sometimes one does not love the other person, but loves instead the idealized image of that person. When the difference is realized, one becomes disillusioned, falls out of love, and the relationship is over. If a couple can grow past the stage of loving their idealized image of each other, there is the possibility that they will be able to love in a much more mature manner. For some, this growth will occur in the relationship, and their love for each other will then mature. For others, maturity comes after the ending of an immature relationship. I've seen many people loving with an immature love. Love equals doing something to somebody or for somebody. Love equals taking care of someone. Love equals never having to say you're sorry. Love equals always being strong. Love equals being nice. Shirley had believed that love equals being nice, and she was trying to improve an unhealthy relationship. Ken asked her in the seminar why it was not working for her to be nice. Shirley replied, "I guess I just wasn't nice enough." Many, most of us, while growing up, have never received enough unconditional love. Love that was given by parents or others just because we were, not because we earned it for being good. We adopt immature forms of love towards others because we've not been loved unconditionally. Nevertheless, we can come to realize that mature love equals loving yourself for being who you are, and likewise loving another person for who he or she is. When we can feel such unconditional, no matter how you act, love, we have learned what I call mature love. Mature love allows you to fully be yourself with the person that you love. In my experience, it is difficult for many people to give up the immature forms of love, because that is the way they've always received their strokes, attention, and of course good feelings. Yet eventually they recognize that they had to keep striving harder in order to earn the love they were seeking. It is like settling for second best, taking whatever strokes we can, rather than going all the way to get really good strokes by learning to love ourselves. Building on my experience, I have found that many people write that love is caring and giving, and making the person that they're with happy, and that very few people include in their definition of love a mature idea of self-love. If the center of your love is in your partner, and the relationship dissolves, the center is suddenly removed, and this makes ending of your relationship even more painful. What might it be like if you become a whole person and learn to love yourself? If the ending of your relationship does happen, then there would still be the pain and the trauma, but it would not be so devastating for you, and you would still be a whole person. The ending of a relationship is very traumatic for those who have not centered their love within themselves and learned to love themselves. Many end up feeling unlovable, or that they are incapable of loving another person. So naturally, many try to prove to themselves that they are lovable and search for another relationship immediately. In the section on sexuality, we explore how some people become sexually promiscuous in developing all kinds of relationships with anyone who comes along. Clearly, they have confused sex and love, feeling that if they go out and find sex, and with it will come the love that they've been missing and needing for so long. The old Beatles line, "All the lonely people, where do they all come from?" expresses for me the vital need so many people have who have never learned to love and to be loved. In our modern society, it has become increasingly easy to love other people and not allow oneself to be loved. So here, by wanting to love another person, you may be really hiding your own need to be loved. We can see how the need to be unconditionally loved is not met in our lives, for when we are a child, love appears unconditional, by the basics of food, clothing, shelter, care, and physical affection. So the child has no question that this love is infinite and omnipotent. Then what happens? With age, maturity, and awareness, we become aware that another can stop loving another for any reason, or that the love may be ended by death. So for adults, it is emotionally difficult to accept unconditional love. What I'm putting forward is to approach such an apparent problem by learning to love yourself unconditionally, with a simple acceptance of yourself for who you are, a unique individual with no one else in the world quite like you. Naturally, it is difficult to love yourself if you haven't been loved as a child, and this is where a spiritual relationship becomes important, because if you can develop faith in a supreme being who gives unconditional love, which has been difficult for you to accept within yourself, then you experience value of being loved for who you are, and not for what you do for someone else. Here we experience unconditional love, and once we have such a connection, then we can extend the same unconditional love for others. Now, back to science for a short while, to define consciously, so we can build a bridge to our emotional self. Psychologists place a great deal of emphasis on personalities. One way of looking at such psychological diagnoses is that they are all trying to define different ways that people are compensating for a lack of love. And if we could peel back these diagnoses down to the heart and core, we would find that the basic problem is that people have not learned to be loved and to love. In my series, The Power of Caring, which I created back in 1989, I continually return to this simple and yet for many elusive connection, where I am emphasizing unconditional love so strongly because it is such a vital quality for human growth. To know that I am valuable enough just because I am me, and to be loved regardless of how I act. However, in my work, I continually find that the belief that love is doing something to or for somebody, and so rather than love being centered within us, it is clearly always centered within someone else. This naturally leaves us feeling how our energy is constantly being drained from us, rather than experiencing such energy expanding and filling our day-to-day lives. Let's take a break and then return and take a look at some of the common ways of exchanging and thereby exploring different forms of love. Friendship love is not as loaded with emotion and feeling, for as the relationship starts with liking each other, and then this liking just grows into something more, which might be called love. It is cooler, lacking in the passion of romantic love. Sex is not as important to the friendship lover, often developing long after the relationship has begun. This is one of the most stable styles of loving, and it is not unusual for people who develop this style of loving to remain good friends, even if the relationship ends, because their love was based upon mutual respect and friendship, rather than strong emotional feelings. Game-playing love regards the relationship as a game with certain rules to follow, and game players are not as interested in intimacy as romantic lovers. In fact, they may have several simultaneous relationships in order to avoid closeness and intimacy. Such lovers tend to make up their own special rules, and their relationship will follow whatever rules are most convenient. For example, there is the needy style of loving that tends to be full of possessiveness and dependency. This style of loving is very emotional, and such intensity makes the relationship unstable. The people involved tend to have difficulty maintaining the relationship because they feel intense emotions such as jealousy, possessiveness, which naturally results in insecurity. Some look for another relationship within a short time in order to be happy based on an immature style of dependent and possessive love. The practical lover takes a realistic look at their partner and decides on a rational and intellectual basis if this love is appropriate. This sort of partner will make sure that there is a similarity in spiritual or religious, political, financial views on handling money, as well as family life. Naturally, they will include exploring any failings in their partner's family, socio-economic status, characteristics in the way they look, as well as for some form of genetic makeup. The practical lover will choose someone with whom it makes good sense to love. The altruistic lovers may be somewhat other person-centered in being very willing to meet the needs of the other person. When this is carried to the extreme, the altruistic lover may become the martyr based on meeting other people's needs by giving all of their energy, money, and time to the other person. Then there is the authentic altruistic lover, who is someone with a full heart and enough inner strength to be able to love another person in a very unselfish manner. And it's interesting to note from my experience and the experiences of colleagues how such a person has a powerful spiritual belief. Each person is obviously a mixture of these styles, and there is no one style that fits us all at all times. Understanding your own mixture of styles is very important when you enter a committed relationship or partnership with another person. One couple with whom I was doing marriage counselling had a great deal of difficulty because he was a friendship lover and she a romantic lover. She felt that his cool love was not love at all, and he felt her romantic love was unstable. His style of loving was to take care of her, provide for her needs, and stay with her in the relationship as proof of his love. When she asked him to say, "I love you," and to express other romantic thoughts and feelings, so that she felt loved, he could not answer. They had difficulty in communicating and understanding each other's viewpoints because their basic beliefs about what love was and was not were incompatible. At this point, and as a guide, how about the question, how do we learn to love ourselves? And, as we have seen, the answer is not always easy. So here are some specific exercises that will help with learning to love yourself. However, before beginning, think of a time in your life when you started to make changes. They may have been when you first had difficulties in your relationship, or when the two of you first separated, or, for that matter, when you decided to work with me in the rebuilding process. Make a list of changes that you have made, the personal growth that you have experienced since that time, and the things that you've learned about yourself, others, and of course life. Consider the feeling of confidence you have gained from learning these things and getting more in control of your own life. That confidence is what provides you with good, positive feelings, and then the length of your list may come as a pleasant surprise. I'm indebted to Virginia Satir, who devised a method of helping people learn to gain more self-love, which I'd like to introduce you to. She asked people to make a list of 5 objectives that could describe them. After you've made this list, go through and put a plus or a minus sign after each word to indicate whether you think this is a positive or negative. After you've done this, look at the minus and see if you can find any positive statements about that particular word in terms of a quality or aspect of your personality. For example, a woman in one of the seminars listed bitchy. When questioned by the group about it, she said how her husband constantly referred to her in this way. As she began to talk about it, the group realized what he called bitchiness, she called assertiveness, in the sense of a positive way to stick up for herself. So, once now she understood the difference of labels, she was able to accept that as a part of herself, and now feel good about it. After all, that is what self is, learning to accept ourselves for what and who we really are. As Carl Rogers stated, when we learn to accept ourselves for who and what we are, then that often gives us permission to grow, change, and become something different, where we can embrace the next unfolding stages of our life. However, for as long as you don't accept a part of who you are, you will naturally have trouble changing that part. We all need to discover that it's okay not to be okay in certain areas of our life. We have all had traumatic experiences that have left us wounded and times when we did not feel loved. But those experiences are a part of our life and living such a life. We are not perfect, because we are human beings, and when we learn to accept some of the non-okay things about us, then we are in balance, where such balance allows us to become authentic. Okay, how does one learn to love another person? What causes the feelings of love for another person to begin? Perhaps it was a kind and thoughtful deed they did. Maybe by doing something that met your needs, or they made you feel good about yourself. So, if you were to set aside a period of time tomorrow to do something that really felt good and made you feel okay about yourself, then that could be a way of learning to love yourself more fully and completely. After all, it would be you that was capable of doing something kind and lovable for you. In my work and in my own life, the most important method of learning to love yourself has been to give permission to love yourself. And if you can decide that it's okay and not selfish or self-centered to love yourself, maybe you can allow yourself to move into a place where you have feelings of self-love. As we finish and prepare for our next one-to-one session, the growth that you've achieved is something that no one has done for you, and so no one can take it away from you. Your life is in your control, through the heartfelt knowledge about yourself and others. To that extent, you are not at the mercy of other people anymore. Let the good feelings of your development at this stage in your life become heartfelt. Let yourself just feel love for you for a while. Because it's not just okay to feel love for yourself. No, it's more than okay. It is the way that life is meant to be. Here is the checklist for our next one-to-one session. 1. I feel I am lovable. 2. I'm not afraid of being loved. 3. I'm not afraid of loving another. 4. I have an understanding of what I believe love is. 5. I am living a lifestyle that is in balance with my definition of love. 6. I feel comfortable with meeting my own needs rather than feeling and labeling myself as selfish. 7. I'm able to accept love from others. 8. I am able to express love to others in a way that makes them feel loved. 9. I'm able to love myself. 10. I have experienced a great deal of personal growth since my crisis began. And finally, 11. I'm trying to develop my immature, needy, dependent parts of love into a more mature style of loving. The end.